You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where the little red button in our office operates a trapdoor for when we're fucking sick of you. If you enjoy your trip into the midside here today, it'd be really awesome if you could tell a friend, because that is how we get more listeners, and that is how we get a bigger community, and that is how we can all witness the farce together. Also, the end of the year is upon us, so if you want to participate in the voting for the year-end awards, head over to themidside.com/awards. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Fake news, my friend. Fake news. I am not joining you from our nation's capital. I am, in fact, joining you from what could only be considered the exact opposite of our nation's capital. Basically, a cornfield.
So you're
in nowhere, Illinois.
Middle of nowhere, Illinois. Okay, so you're with Bears fans today.
Yes.
Corn USA.
That's right. On the corner of corn and soy.
Also joining us from the hills of white privilege, maybe. I don't even know anymore. I don't even know where my co-hosts are. So, James Elias.
I'm actually in Bangkok, Thailand. No, I'm in the hills of white privilege. It's been a while since I've been on the midside.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks.
So it's good to be back just in time. Yeah. And it was tough getting along without you, but I managed. I survived. I'm here. And I also have a little red button in my room, and it is for muting the microphone so I can sip on whiskey incrementally throughout.
I love how someone got a text message right as you said muting the microphone. Good job, everyone.
Okay, I'll mute my phone with the other red button.
Oh, that wasn't Daniel?
It
was not me.
That was me.
It's even funnier. That is even funnier. All right, let's go on to some other things that are funnier. There's a lot of farce to witness this week. It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals.
Deck the halls with some rape culture. It is that time of year, and the Trump White House is hanging mistletoe, and some people are freaking out. I love these "some people" in the headline. It's really good journalism there. Some people
freaking out. I wasn't intending on butting in so early, but isn't that like when you're a kid and like your parents ask you something and they're like, they were mean to me. Well, who were mean to you? Or everybody says, well, who's everybody? Isn't that like a psychological thing that's like, that's if you're thinking that way, that's like a psychologically unhealthy way of thinking?
Yeah, totally. And in this case, it's an instance of journalists want to bash Trump, and so they'll basically go to any lengths to do so. And this has been a journalistic trick for years, so much so that my journalism teacher said if she saw us write a sentence with this, she would fail us immediately on whatever the paper was. But it's the thing of you talk about, like, you interview an expert and they give a quote, and then your next sentence as a journalist is, but some people disagree. And that's it. But some people... It's like, okay, well, fuck off. Some people aren't newsworthy, which is the case in this story. That's right.
Fies is just
the White House has hung the mistletoe for the holiday season, as Kate Bennett on Twitter has reported. I believe she's a journalist. And then here we go into full terrible journalism mode. But some people saw the mistletoe as a faux pas in light of the wave of sexual harassment and assault allegations that have swept the news. At McKinney Bryce, a no-name, says, seems like a not great idea to have mistletoe hanging in the White House amid a stretch of sexual misconduct stories. At Mish Hastings, another no-name, said, harassment stations, a.k.a. mistletoe, hung from the ceiling of the White House, and this political climate is so perfectly on brand for Trump, it hurts. And then at Robin Amira, a third no-name person, who no one should care about, says, Next, Trump defense from at press secretary, quote, but she was under the mistletoe, end quote. So, Justin, has mistletoe become yet another sign of the patriarchal rape culture?
Well, I think we'll get into that a little bit more in the second article, the one that you found. So I think it's interesting about that. But the thing that to ask in general is mistletoe. Like, was it ever actually used for you guys as to what they said it was used for? Like, when you're under it, you have to kiss someone? Like, did anyone ever actually witness that in anything but the movies? Because I never did.
Not in my household, certainly. Although we were not big on celebrating or joy or holidays. So, never hung any mistletoe. Never really knew that was a thing, I think, until college, actually.
That's interesting. I knew it was a thing, but it was one of those things that's, like, not real to me. Like, people say, oh, hang the mistletoe and you kiss under it. But no one ever actually did.
Yeah, you hear it in Christmas carols and stuff, and then I remember it from the Scrooge story, or not the Scrooge story, from the George C. Scott version of the Christmas Carol. But I just thought, like, that's just, I don't know. It's one of those traditions that they sing about on Christmas, and you just figure, like, oh, there was once a time where that happened, I guess, and we're supposed to.
Yeah, but if we're talking about things we hear in something. Christmas carols that aren't actually real, that are quite disturbing, first of all, has anyone here ever actually had, or anyone on the show ever actually had, figgy pudding?
Right.
And also,
we wish you a figgy pudding.
We wish you a
figgy pudding. That's rape culture.
You're not going to leave until you get some. So I think the Trump White House, if they're going to embrace this troll culture, which I'm sure they were trolling by putting the mistletoe up and taking that picture, like that.
That's so sad that that is trolling, though. Like, just what's next? Do you hang up a Captain America shield and that's like trolling because you're pro-America?
The White House today put up American flags.
Yeah. No, so they just need to put a table with figgy pudding next to the mistletoe.
And start playing Baby It's Cold Outside on loop throughout the White House. I always thought growing up that mistletoe was what guys got when they wore their pants too tight. No?
Please tell me.
Nice.
Please tell me you made that up.
I didn't think that.
Yeah. Okay, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because that's something else I didn't know what it was for a very long time. When did you learn what camel toe meant?
Oh, it was back in aught 12. No, I have no idea. I do when I learned what camel toe was.
Well, you know when you meant learned what mistletoe
was. I remember
where
I was on
9/11,
and when I learned what camel toe was. It was the two defining moments of my childhood. Oh, my God.
That's not that far off, I think, from a lot of people.
Well, speaking of certain things, apparently the mistletoe is just another example in a long string of things that show how brutal the male libido can be, at least according to an insane opinion piece in the Sunday Review of the New York Times. It begins like this, quote, after weeks of continuously unfolding abuse scandals, men have become quite literally unbelievable. What any given man... What any given man might say about gender politics and how he treats women are separate and unrelated phenomena. Liberal or conservative, feminist or chauvinist, woke or benighted. Benighted? The fuck is benighted? Young or old.
Yeah, hashtag benighted.
Found on Fox News or in the New Republic, a man's stated opinions have next to no relationship to his behavior. And then it goes in to say, essentially, that men arrive at this moment of reckoning woefully unprepared. Most are shocked by the reality of women's lived experience. Almost all are uninterested or unwilling to grapple with the problem at the heart of all of this. The often ugly and dangerous nature of the male libido.
And this is in the New York Times.
This is not Slate. Put that out there. For most of history, we've taken for granted the implicit brutality of male sexuality. In 1976, the radical feminist and pornography opponent Andrea Dworkin said that the only sex between a man and a woman that could be undertaken without violence was sex with a flaccid penis. Quote, I think that men will have to give up their precious erections, unquote, she wrote. point of order, I'm not sure she knows how sex works. Okay. And in the 3rd century AD, it was widely believed that the great Catholic theologian Origen, working on the roughly the same principle, castrated himself. Fear of the male libido has been subject of myth and a fairy tale from the beginning of literature. What else were the stories of Little Red Riding Hood or Bluebeard's Castle about? Justin, should we constantly fear the male libido?
Clearly, that is what I've learned after everything that has happened, that we are all Harvey Weinstein, Daniel.
That's right.
Don't you feel guilty?
That's right, I do.
So,
the original sin of having been born with a Y chromosome.
Right, well, and that's the thing we can talk about in a second here, is that's what I want to get to eventually with this whole puritanical Christian approach to things. But first I want to talk about a couple minor points. The first is the definition of benighted. In a state of pitiful or contemptible intellectual or moral ignorance, typically owing to a lack of opportunity. Now, instinctively, I want to say we should start saying we're benighted to combat the ideas of you have to be woke. But the question I have for you, would doing that just be taking on the ethos of like Trump and the alt-right? Because that's what they do. The idea of like you say we're deplorable, therefore we're deplorable. Would that be the same sort of rhetoric, Daniel?
I think it's unfortunately too similar, although something about me wants to call ourselves benighted but put a K in it.
Yes, I had the same idea. That's where I was going.
Yes. And have our logo be an obnoxiously large sword.
Yeah, and we just say be knighted. Like be knighted.
Anyway.
Yeah. Alright. So that's the first thing.
Does someone become benighted by like touching the tip of their penis to each of their
shoulders?
You just made that weirdly gay, and I'm not really comfortable with it.
That's all right. It's the mid.
We're pretty much comfortable
I mean,
with weirdly gay.
Yeah. All right. So I also want to point to a quote in this article. This was the most surprising quote to me in this entire article. So I'm reading this whole thing and I have this picture of the author in my head. And I'm sure you in the audience out there, because we have not mentioned anything about the author, have the same picture in your head. And then in the middle of the article, there is a quote that ends a paragraph. And I want to read this sentence to you right now. Very often when I interview men, okay, same picture, it is the first time they've ever discussed intimate questions seriously, okay, same picture, with another man. What? So this is a guy who wrote this article? This is like Joss Whedon to me. This is like, okay, dude, could you more obviously project the fact that you are a sexual predator? Like, somebody dig up this guy's history. Like, I seriously mean what I'm saying. Like, for this guy to say this, like, he's projecting
right.
what
okay,
he's done
yeah.
the way he is. I'm sorry you feel this way about yourself, that you think you're evil, that you're intrinsically evil. But some of us aren't. And some of us can control, and some of us, I don't know, have discretion.
Yeah, even absence, like, I'm not saying that we have any evidence to suggest that this guy has done bad things, but I think something we've learned on this show is that the sort of louder one proclaims the sort of categorically irrational ideas about entire groups of people, the more it turns out that this is how they think as human beings. So when someone makes these loud declarations that all you should be scared of all men's libido, they are a man. Like, that means you should be scared of their libido, and it's revealing, I think, more of their psychology than it is of any truth about men or libido or sexuality.
Right.
Right, because if it's not true of all men, then how is it that this person came to this conclusion? Like, I mean, either he's just a wanton coward and just repeating what he thinks he's supposed to say, or this is an actual induction from his own experience.
Indeed. You know what I didn't appreciate is he went on to quote Freud. And all I could think was...
Well, that made things worse.
How many times do we have to debunk Freud before we stop fucking quoting Freud? This guy I know has no scientific background whatsoever, and I assume if we looked up his background, I'm going to see if there's a little thing. He's the author of The Unmade Bed, The Messy Truth About Men and Women in the 21st Century. I assume that means he's an English major, because the only people on the planet who still continually fucking quote Sigmund Freud are English majors.
Well, have we checked in on this guy's history yet? Did he kill his father in an attempt to marry his mother?
You know, I haven't looked it up,
is
but
his father still
I say
alive?
It's like, it can't be greater than a 40% chance. Like, I just... I'm gonna have to give him the benefit of the doubt there. So I don't know. This article really bothers me because this is just a massively collectivist approach to this. When even though we've seen a lot of these stories come out in the news about sexual predators, especially in Hollywood and politics, still, how many men are there? Like, this is not, you cannot say that this is some fucking horrific, cataclysmic event in human culture when still the vast majority of men do not participate in this kind of activity. I don't know. James?
Well, this is... Go ahead.
I'm still trying to figure out... Yeah, I mean, that goes without saying. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what the motive is here. I know it's something nihilistic. Like, that's obvious. It's on the left. It ends up attacking a huge value, sex, for no on the grounds of basically no evidence and on the grounds of collectivistic thinking. But I feel like there's a lot to this I don't understand. There's aspects of like exactly how it's done that don't make sense to me. Like, why attack men instead of women, for example? Like, is that just because men are, like, allegedly the ones in power so that you can, like, historically have been the ones in power so it fits into their Marxist narrative? It can't just be that.
I think that's all you need in the Marxist
narrative. I mean, like, absolutely, that's a part of it. Yeah, it's all we need to know it's wrong. But I don't know, just as a study of the idea itself, there's a lot to this that...
I think you're giving this guy way too much
doesn't
credit.
Connect
I think you're
to
giving
me.
Him way too much credit.
No. I'm not saying he has some kind of really intricate intellectual position we have a lot to learn from. I'm saying, like, I want to know my enemy, and I feel... still a little confused by my enemy here.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I really don't think it goes beyond, like, he's a guy, he has his own fucking problems and his own self-esteem issues, so he's internalized this idea of, I'm fucked up, so I need to virtue signal to make myself okay and make myself be forgiven because I have all this guilt for existing. And these are who is attacked right now, the men. And to have people like me, I am a male, so I must fall on my sword to be liked. I really don't think it's any deeper than that from a psychological standpoint.
From a psychological standpoint, you are correct, I think. I don't think it's any more complicated than that. My question is what is the ideology that made this the ideology you sign on to in order to virtue
signal? Well, this is the combination
of
modern feminist thought and the old puritanical views towards sex.
How is the puritanical view towards sex coming into this? I understand that that's going to end up being kind of the result, I think. That's not obvious, though. Like, I don't know if the result is going to be some sort of puritanical ban on sex. It's going to look a little bit more
I wasn't talking about the result.
Like...
I'm talking about where this comes from. And
okay.
I mean, maybe you could expand it to Christianity in general because of Catholicism as well. But it's just this idea of guilt. Mm-hmm. For self-enjoyment and guilt for being a man. He hasn't accepted what it means to be a man and be the aggressor and that's not violent. And then he's combined that with this idea of the feminist thing that all men are aggressors and that is bad because the only way to be is to be feminine, which the female role is to be the acceptor. I'm talking sexually here, people.
Yeah. Maybe this is kind of like it's an attack on man, on humanity as such. So, like, for example, man is meant to eat meat. He's better off nutritionally if he eats meat. But there's on the Christian moral grounds of self-sacrifice, there is a way to attack man based on his enjoyment of meat. So, like, a nihilist can sort of use aspects of religious morality against mankind to attack his very nature, and maybe that's what
James.
We're seeing here is only now you're seeing not just the enjoyment of sex but the unequal nature of sex is being attacked as a way of attacking mankind as such to sully him and to make him gross
you're spot on. I see this in the straight edge movement. Straight edge was originally don't drink, don't do drugs, don't have promiscuous sex because you're respecting your body and what you put into it and how you treat it. Now people say being vegan is part of straight edge because if you're respecting what goes in your body, you're not going to disrespect animals by eating them and putting them in your body. That's what they say, vegans.
I think it's the ultimate respect.
So now there's vegan is part of straight edge
yeah.
because of what you're saying.
Agreed. Does anyone want to bow before my brilliance? I looked up Stephen Marsh. In 2005, he received a doctorate in early modern English drama from the University of Toronto. Thank you.
Shocking.
I'll bow before
your
brilliance.
That was obvious. Come on. Thank you.
Anyone who quotes Freud is automatically an English major.
I'll bow before your basic English reasoning
major
skills.
Freud, you're an English major. The end. Quoting people. I don't know. I don't know where to go with this next story, so I'm just going to read it.
Well, no, hold on. The one thing I want to say is, before we move on from here, this is part of this, and I don't know where this fits in, but this sort of goes towards the puritanical point or whatever. We went to another extreme in this culture where we had no sexual morality. We need to find the middle ground, I guess we're in the midside here, where you do have responsibility for your choices, and you are making choices, and it is a moral issue who you choose to have sex with and who you don't. That's part of the whole issue here.
Certainly. Yeah, I wouldn't call it a middle ground per se, but I would call it a new morality about sex, certainly. One that is not endlessly promiscuous and one that is not puritanically restrictive.
Oh, so you mean right in between?
It's not in the middle. It's way over on the side somewhere else. It's in a different state. Certainly not Illinois.
It's in a different dimension. It's in the mid-side, maybe?
The mid-side. Not the middle. The mid-side. That's certainly acceptable.
Mid-side. All right.
Absolutely. So anyway, the nation's largest retailer.
Press this too hard and you're just going to invalidate the whole name of the show, Justin. So let's not push that any further.
The nation's largest.
That's what she said.
Okay, I hate you all. I'm trying to move the show along. I'm trying to get some momentum, trying to get us going, not stopping on stories.
You look like the Buffalo Bills.
That's right. I lost all my momentum. Okay. The nation's largest retailer, Walmart, removed from its website a controversial t-shirt that threatens journalists shortly after the RTDNA, which is the Radio Television Digital News Association, and its Voice of the First Amendment Task Force sent a letter to the company's top executives requesting its removal. The shirt featured the words, quote, rope, period, tree, period, journalist, period, some assembly required, had been offered for sale on Walmart.com by a third-party seller, Teespring.com, which also offers offers on its site a coffee mug featuring the same slogan. The RTDNA executive director, Dan Shelley, said in a letter that this shirt could, quote, at the least inflame the passions of those who either don't like or don't understand the news media. At worst, they openly encourage violence targeting journalists. Justin, how many of these shirts did you order before they were taken down?
I ordered zero because I don't understand shirts like this. Now, there's a lot to unpack in this story, but the first thing I will say is, who as a human being is like, I'm going to wear a shirt that supports lynching and thinks it's funny? Yeah. Like, what if I just wore a shirt that's like, I'm going to murder everyone? Like, is that like a clever, interesting shirt? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Bullets, gun, your head, some assembly required.
Right, exactly. That's the same thing. That is the same exact shirt. There's no difference between that shirt and the shirt you just said. But if you wore that, people would be like, what's wrong with you? But we have this culture now where people wear these ignorant shirts. I mean, Walmart has it too, right? Like, what is it? This is like, I hate people. You can buy shirts like that in Walmart, or like, you know, I'm sarcastic or something like that. Or like, excuse me. It's just like everyone thinks they're clever and smart and elitist, so they wear these shirts. And we have these dumb, ignorant people wearing these shirts. It's just mind-boggling. And then there's the other thing of, okay, Walmart is to get more clicks on their site, and I don't know if they get a percentage of it or not, but they're listing Teespring products when you search for something in Walmart. Have you tried to buy something on Walmart.com and you go there and it's like, this item is not sold by Walmart. It is sold and shipped by this other manufacturer. Then why is it listed on the Walmart page? I wanted to do that so I could get something and go to Walmart and pick it up.
Yeah.
So this is part of Walmart's, they're trying to do this new policy, I think, probably to angle themselves, position themselves
for the
future.
It's to compete with Amazon. Because Amazon does a lot of
this. They're doing it very poorly.
Where it's not sold by Amazon, but you're an Amazon seller, which is a kind of thing, and Amazon gets a percentage then.
Right, but Amazon checks that stuff, right? I'm assuming?
I don't know how it works in its entirety. I'm sure in this situation It's not like someone had to approve the shirt to be on Walmart.com. Essentially, a bunch of these things were loaded into an algorithm for Teespring that automatically put them on the Walmart website.
And look, I'm not saying this shirt should be banned, but I mean, I would hope whoever runs Walmart would have enough class to be like, yeah, we're not going to put that shirt on our website.
Well, not that they didn't put it on their website, but they did take it off once they were notified about it. Maybe their business model requires a little bit of tinkering to have some sort of filter here, but yeah.
Yeah, and then the last thing is, the most protected class in America is journalists. Like, seriously? This might incite violence against journalists. They might get the wrong idea against journalists. Yeah, okay.
This is almost as bad as Donald Trump tackling the concept of CNN.
I just liked, yeah. I remember that gif of...
Do you remember that one?
This gif of Trump tackling a guy with a CNN logo on his face will lead to violence against journalists. No.
Oh, the WrestleMania gif that they were Trump in WWE, they put the gif over the CNN logo and stuff over the wrestler he tackled.
Like,
yeah.
No, I don't think anyone sees this and goes, oh, I should go tackle CNN.
Like, the concept of CNN, like, the corporation, the corporate entity should be tackled. Like,
yeah. Hey, everybody, let's go tackle a building.
Yeah. Gotta go.
Yeah, like, what aspect is he tackling?
Not worth it. So, yeah, certainly this shirt is in poor taste, but I also do not buy the argument that this will incite violence against journalists. I don't get any of that. It's the... You ever seen the Bill Burr skit where he's talking about the sign outside the bar and the sign says, we like our violence like we like our beer, domestic? And he says, like, they had to take it down because it would the city said it would incite violence against women. And he's like, as if someone walking by that sign looks at it and goes, and then just goes home and beats his wife. Yeah.
Like, I better go home and hit my wife.
That's not how that works. And that's not how violence against journalists works either. So...
Now, look, here's the thing. Even about that phrase, right? Like, okay, that's a clever turn of phrase. Like, just a sort of wordplay, that's clever. And maybe that's something you, like, say to your buddies. But at what point are you like, you know that joke I made about domestic violence when I was, like, hammered the other night? What if I made that a sign and hung it up in my bar?
I agree. This is the sign I agree on both. It's a stupid marketing gimmick. But also, it does not going to incite violence against women.
This is like something I hate so much. Like, people like who wear socks with little marijuana leaves on it. Like, I get it. You smoke weed. I get it. Like, congratulations.
What a rebel.
But why are you going to wear socks that have pot leaves on them? Like,
that's right. I like weed so much, they need to keep my feet warm.
That also pissed me off, especially when I was young, because I was like, man, like... Out of all the things to brag about that you smoke weed, like, why don't you at least have, like, a, you know, socks with, I don't know, like, a basketball on it? Like, you play basketball. That's even a little tooly, but at least you're showing off that you do something as opposed to just lay there.
I mean, I know how to inhale.
Do nothing.
Right. But at least at a certain point, and even now in most states, weed is illegal. Like, what about the people who wear socks that have, like, pizza slices on them? Congratulations, you are the one human being who can eat and likes pizza.
Well, maybe this... Go ahead.
I'm going to... Returning to the shirt itself, or more specifically the people who whined about it, I'm going to do what I usually do and, like, ruin a large portion of the whole point of this show, which is that the left is just to point out that, like, you'll notice that the left has no trouble with the violent rhetoric on the actual calls to violence on their side, because everything to them, they don't believe that words express truth. They just believe words are social signaling that increase the odds that you'll manipulate other people into your position.
Totally.
So,
well, that's why the journalists are complaining about this shirt, because they want to be seen as protected and untouchable. And it's this whole idea that, you know, they want to be the popular kids in high school and the popular kids you couldn't say this stuff about. So it's like, oh, man, someone made a shirt about me and it hurts my feelings. We got to get the principal to take it down. Hello, the popular kids didn't do that. They went and joked about hanging themselves and then everyone was like, huh, that's funny. And everyone moved on.
Now I am at a high school that I do not recognize, so. Maybe the woman in our next story should get socks with little boobs on them. Apparently, a woman
for her child
regularly goes to Disneyland is defending her, quote, right to publicly nurse by saying that boobs are not sexual. A mom of two is defending her right to publicly breastfeed at Disneyland after she was criticized by women at the park and by others on social media. I'm going to leave out a paragraph for the moment because it adds to the farce, but the farce right now is thick enough. So, quote, I was standing in a very long line to get our picture taken, my son got hungry and I wasn't going to wait in another line again, so I took off my top and nursed, she wrote in a Facebook post shared in the Breastfeeding Mama Talk group. These women are making snarky comments, so I moved from my spot to catch a picture with these characters, not for attention for me, but attention to the fact no woman should be shamed for feeding their baby uncovered, and it is accompanied by a picture that cannot be unseen. She quickly said in a post in response to criticisms, boobs are not sexual. If you can't inform your kids a baby is eating, that's not my issue. Am I normally this exposed when I feed my son? No, but not all moments as a mother are glamorous. In this moment, he is a big boy and is pulling on my nursing shirt. Justin, did you send this story in because you personally saw this at Disneyland? I know you're there quite often.
Okay. I do live down the street and I am there quite often, but if I had seen this, I know, you know, you, Daniel, and my girlfriend, you don't want me to get into a lot of confrontations, but this is one where if I saw this, I might have said something to, like, a Disneyland representative, one of the cast members there. Because to me, this is, like, just total lack of tone deaf. It's total lack of tone to the point, honestly, that I wonder if she's doing this intentionally for attention. But that's a whole other discussion. That's a psychological discussion. But this is so, like, you can't even go as a guy. You can't go shirtless at Disneyland. If I take off my shirt at Disneyland, they would tell me to put it back on. Like, that's how it is. They can throw you out if you're wearing certain shirts at
Disneyland.
That's
just you, though, Justin.
Yeah, it's just me because, you know, I'm so fat and out of shape, you know.
No, we're going to go the opposite joke, which is you're too sexy and start a fire.
I'm just joking.
Oh, see, I'm okay with that joke. That's quite all right with me. Although, Disneyland, it might be a lot of gay guys around, but so they already have very stringent things, and then it's about children and family, and then you're in line in the middle of the park, and then they have areas where you can do this, like this just makes my brain explode. Like this episode, what is this episode called?
The Justin's Head Explodes the Edition.
Well, exactly. This is called the mistletoe edition, right? The mistletoe edition. But this really should be like, do people have no sense of decorum and intelligence?
To be fair, that could be every episode.
Edition. Yeah, I know. My point is just, we're at this point in our culture, right? And this goes back to the shirt thing. We're at this point in our culture where we have such this idea of don't judge and tolerance for people that it's just like, oh, yeah, whatever people decide is okay is okay. Like, this is the whole shame thing. Like, shame is a good thing because it helps us realize what's good and what's bad. Now, when we have relativism, you can't have shame because then everyone's shaming over whatever the fuck they feel like shaming. But when you have some sort of morality and rational basis, objective basis, you can shame and be like, dude, you're a fucking idiot for wearing a lynching t-shirt. Or, dude, ma'am, you're a fucking idiot for trying to nurse in front of everyone in Disneyland.
Yeah. I love this sentence in the article.
Like, is she in front of the giant Christmas tree?
Yes.
In the middle of Disneyland?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I love this sentence because it's an exercise in unnecessary words, which I really like, which can be funny. So the sentence is, California law allows mothers to breastfeed, covered or uncovered, in public or private. Do you know that, Justin, that mothers were allowed to breastfeed in private by California law?
That's scarier than you think. The fact that California is slipping in there, that they can tell us what to do in private, they're
I don't know
setting
if
the
California
legal precedent.
Slipped that in there, if this was a stupid journalist, quote unquote. I just love those extra words that add no context to the story. It's my favorite. It's like people trying to be politically correct. Was it that there's a football player that Adam Carolla talks about who did a documentary, and he was talking about slapping people upside the head to cause them to lose focus for a second. And he said, so when you slap someone upside the head, a man or a woman, they're going to lose focus for a moment. And it's like, you're talking about football. Where are all
he's
the,
technically
where
not
all
wrong.
The women playing football? Or but he's woman. Trying to be politically correct by slipping in or a woman. And it ends up being hysterical. So, anyway.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong. You don't need to say that because you're playing football. Not a lot of women out there, you know, catching passes.
But what do you guys think about this? Like, is this as disgusting to you as it is to me? And are we wrong for thinking it's disgusting because this is a normal thing? I mean, here's the thing. Like, I watched some episodes of Total Divas Now. It's the reality show about women's wrestling when they're not wrestling. So, like, how they're managing their careers and stuff. And two of the women, the Bella Twins, aren't wrestling anymore. And one just had a kid. So the whole episode recently for her entire plot in the episode was about breastfeeding and about donating her breast milk. So isn't it interesting that at this one hand we're trying to demonize male biology and the way men are naturally, and then we're trying to celebrate and talk about how awesome women are and make everyone desensitized to it?
Yeah, it's not a thing that I'm disgusted by. Like it wouldn't I also don't have a pulse, so it wouldn't have fazed me for one second if I was there. But I do understand that there are things like this relates to a bodily function. And we understand that just some people are uncomfortable with that. And so for common courtesy, we relegate certain elements of bodily functions to areas where the other people can't see you. We have bathrooms and we have, eating areas and we have whatever so that you can go to designated areas and do whatever it is you need to do. And you don't have to be out in the public with everyone else. So I get that, and I think that just showing some normal, common human decency, you would just go to the designated areas and do this, and it would not be a huge deal. Like, just be a goddamn human. Like, yeah.
I mean, or just, you know, it's not certain. It's not a hill to die on if other people are uncomfortable with it. That being said, I don't think people should be uncomfortable with this. Like, if you're turned on and just like by breastfeeding, that is weird to me. That is a separate function of the titties is breastfeeding other than pleasing me. That just, it's two just separate things. It's like, I don't know. Are women turned on by dicks when a dude is urinating? Like it's sort of like, well, but that being said, I'm still completely against everything this woman is saying. Cause there's deeper nefarious motives behind this to desexualize breasts generally, which is just an attack on sex. And the general trend in this culture has been that we're rational enough now to realize that a lot of our traditional moral standards didn't make sense. And the left is using this as an opening to just try and wipe out all moral standards.
Right. And that's the thing that I'm going to say about like being disgusted by this and not thinking it should happen is there is a rational reason for relegating certain things to certain areas. Like, yeah, I mean like pissing, like, that's a normal thing. And, like, as a dude, I can just whip it out anywhere and piss. Like, but I don't because there are cleanliness reasons and hygiene reasons for keeping certain things in certain places. We generally eat in certain places, right, too. And I get that it's Disneyland and you can walk around with, like, a churro or, like, a drink or, like, a chicken leg or whatever they have. Like, you can do that and stand in line. But that's a lot different than a baby breastfeeding on his mother. That's something that is very personal and requires a level of hygiene. And there are other people around in that area.
Yeah.
And that's why we
relegate. The real question, though, from this story is that the fact that this woman in this photo has what I believe are the names of her children, one tattooed on each breast. And so the real question is, where does she get the third tattoo if she has another child? Because she's out of boobies, and this is not.
Oh, well, that
a
doesn't
woman
take much imagination.
So.
Well, and this is what I'm talking about, right? Like, I'm not against tattoos, and I think there can be some good tattoos. But if you look at this woman, isn't there something you have to ask about, like, Daniel, you started this whole thing with the whole thing of, like, some people aren't worth reporting on, and some people aren't worth it, and they're not, why are we listening to them? Isn't that the case with someone like this?
Yeah, in this instance, she purposely made a scene, I think, to get attention, but...
Yeah, but I'm calling into question her character.
No, yeah.
And saying, why are we even listening to her? Look at her, she's demonstrating just by how she carries herself.
Especially if her character is goofy.
Ha ha ha. You're just big with the
puns
today.
Let's move on. I don't want to talk about this woman anymore.
Yeah. You're a cunt, woman. Get out of Disneyland. Whoa. I hope they banned you.
Pulled out the see you next Tuesday.
I did. And I hope I don't see you next Tuesday when I'm in Disney. Actually, I'm going on Thursday. So let's move on, though. Let's talk about art that we do like. Not that this is art, but this is whatever. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. A listener messaged me and asked me to watch the movie City of Ember. Midsider Conrad. I did indeed watch it. Conrad is also Polish, so I guess he's Comrade Conrad? Can I say that? I actually think as a Polish person, I can't say that because we fucking hate the Russians and we hate the Germans and fuck everyone. That's how the Polish feel. But City of Ember is a movie. It came out in 2008. It was based on a book. And the basic premise is... There is a city underground that was put there to preserve humanity because I believe there was a nuclear war. And the first mayor was given a box. And this box had the year 200 on it, and every year it would count down, and the mayors had to keep handing it down. Now, at a certain point, the mayors lost it. The chain of custody was broken. And now we are at the present day, and the city is starting to lose power. So there are these rolling blackouts, and they keep getting longer and longer. And everyone's like, oh my God, we're going to die. And it's this, they focus on two kids. One kid works in the pipeworks. Another kid is a messenger. And she finds out, the one that's the messenger, that her family has the box. And she starts to, the box automatically opens after 200 years. It has opened and she starts reading it. And she finds out the builders, the people who bought the city or built the city, have left a clue and instructions as to how to escape the city. So the whole movie is about this boy and this girl escaping the city. And this is, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic dystopia, this story. So a lot of what I've said sounds interesting, and there is a lot interesting going on in this story. But my biggest problem with the story is, in the movie, is all plot. And what I mean by that is a lot of people have this debate, and Daniel, I don't know if you've ever seen this debate having gone through English programs and such, but people have a debate about what's more important, plot or character. Have you seen that debate before or heard it before?
Totally. Yes.
Now, here in the mid-side, what do you think my solution to this debate is?
FDB.
What does FDB stand for?
Oh, false dichotomy, bro.
Right, exactly, 100%. You need a balance between plot and character. This movie does not have that. There's a lot of great themes here, right? Like Bill Murray plays the mayor, and he's this very corrupt mayor who, even though everyone else doesn't have enough provisions, he has a room where the provisions are hidden in, and I'm sure that's what contributes to the city becoming decrepit and the rolling blackouts and everything, beyond the fact that the city had a time frame to exist in, which was 200 years. So there's a lot of great stuff plot-wise and mythologically. But character-wise, there's not enough attention paid to, or any paid to, what is at stake personally? What are the values? What are the conflicts these children or any of these characters are struggling with? They're just, they do make choices. They get assigned certain jobs and they swap the jobs. They decide to follow the builder's instructions. But there's nothing at stake for them. So it's all plot. And that makes it a very, what's the word, didactic. It's a very didactic movie. Likewise, most of the budget was paid towards the sets. The set is wonderfully designed, but that's it. The whole movie takes place in the city, and you can tell that's where they spent all of their money. They do have some good actors in here, you know, Bill Murray, but that was my other major problem with this movie, is just the acting of the adults. It's like they weren't giving any direction, and they're just saying lines as they would say them themselves, which that might be a writing issue as well, where, again, there's no characterization in the dialogue. You know, we took Whedon to task a couple weeks ago for Justice League, but Whedon is very good at having characterization in his dialogue. Still, though, I don't want to act like I didn't enjoy this movie. This movie has a very benevolent and positive sense of life. It's all about them escaping the city and starting life over again. And symbolically, light is very important. Light is dying in the city, and they have to figure out how to get out and get to the light. And they go outside, and they see the sun at the end of the movie, and that's symbolic. So there's a lot that's important about this movie, and it's important as a children's story, because I believe it started as a children's book. So I don't want to seem like this is a bad movie. It's not a bad movie. If I had to rate it out of 10, I'd give it about a 6.5. And it definitely exists in the space of these dystopic, post-apocalyptic movies like Hunger Games or Maze Runner before they came out. So in summary, why you shouldn't see and should see this movie, I'll start with shouldn't. You shouldn't see this movie if you really care about characterization and character arcs and depth of character. It's just not there. If you're a big fan of really good acting too, you shouldn't see this movie. On the other hand, if really it's really important to you, the plot and the themes are really important and the symbolism and you really like set design, these are all reasons to see this movie. It's enjoyable from that perspective. So I think it's worth seeing, but you just have to realize what it is when you sit down to see it. I rented it on Amazon, so I'm sure you can get it there or anywhere else in that sort of way. Let's move on and talk about some movies that haven't come out yet.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Avengers Infinity War is the latest installment in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This trailer seemed to just show the basics, which was a giant purple alien is going to come down and try and take over the world.
James Hetfield.
It wasn't James Hetfield. It was Josh Brolin. Did he look like James Hetfield to you? Huh. Yeah. Okay. I didn't get that. Also, could be Ivan Ooze from the Power Rangers movie. Or Apocalypse from X-Men Apocalypse.
Looked like a roided Bruce Willis to me.
That's funny. So, to me, there wasn't much going on in this trailer. It didn't convince me to see it other than it's a Marvel movie, and I would see it if I was already in love with Marvel movies. There wasn't. It was sort of like Epic, where they were like, here are all the characters saying something, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end, they had Thor, and they did the little nod to what happened in Thor Ragnarok. So, for me, everyone knows my misgivings with Marvel. Nothing in this convinced me that it was anything great. Tackle. Daniel?
This looked like The Avengers as written by George R.R. Martin. All I could think was, how the fuck do we need this many characters in a movie? Like, we just don't need... so many characters. We just don't need them. They're all going to have 10 seconds of screen time. It's going to be insane. So, that being said, my wife is definitely going to watch Avengers. So, I'm almost certainly going to go with her. But I will do it reluctantly. Hug. Ugh.
Hug. I thought that in Justice League, the fact that they had tons of characters and gave like just a tiny vignette to everyone, it made it so that there wasn't enough time for me to recognize all the plot holes and like complete flaws in the in complete like nonsensicalness of what was going on in any of those vignettes, and so I remained interested. So this might have the same virtue to it, but I don't know, probably not. Tackle. Just Marvel. I'm so fed up with movies that don't mean anything. I saw Justice League incidentally, and it wasn't great, but I thought it was good. So, you know, it meant something, you know, so it was fine. Like, this probably won't, so no, goodbye.
Tackle. Second trailer.
Love, Simon is a coming of age movie. I'm not sure. Coming out of age story about a young man who is a young man who is gay and nobody knows he's gay. So he's having angst about coming out. That's it. That's what the story's about. Although, interestingly, IMDb says part of the plot here is he falls in love with somebody who doesn't know who he is, someone online. So that adds to it. That actually sounds more interesting.
That sounds way more interesting than the trailer. All I could think of the trailer was, sorry to cut you off, Justin, but I did, and it's too late. All I could think of the trailer was, this would have been an incredibly pertinent and culturally forward movie in like 1999.
Right.
But now it feels like, you're gay, okay, fine, so is everyone else I know. It's fine. Who cares? Like, can we move on?
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah.
There was also this incredible, probably nihilistic social justice-y thing at the end where, you know, you have the people, you have some kids who are coming out as straight. I have something to tell you, Mom.
Well, that's what I want. That was one of the two things I wanted to talk about in regards to this trailer. Like, that's like a funny, like, stand-up joke, right? Like, haha, what would it be like if straight people had to come out? And then you, like, talk about it a little bit. But the way it was framed in the movie was, why don't straight people have to come out? Okay, let me...
That's how it was meant.
Let me teach you all something out there, though. The reason why is because that's the norm.
How?
Now,
how
I know we don't want to believe
daring.
There aren't norms,
you monster.
But most people are straight. So we just monster. Assume, unless there are clues that you aren't straight, we just assume you are straight. That's why straight people don't have to come out. I mean, do you have to come out as like a man? Like, is that the way it's going to be eventually? Like, we all have to say the gender. Like, can you imagine if in like seventh grade, they're like, okay, everybody, today's the day where we say what gender we identify as. Well, I thought everybody just thought I was a dude. Like, no, Johnny, what gender do you identify as? This is the day.
Yeah.
Like, no. Or race. Like, okay, everyone, this is the day. This is seventh grade. Now we talk about what race we are. What race
That's
do you
right.
identify
Rachel,
as?
Rachel, what race are you? Yeah.
Right. Or like, the white kid is like, yo, I'm going to change my name to LeBron. I identify as black. You can't do
Worst
that, Steve.
Worst black impression I've ever heard.
No, that was a white guy pretending to be black.
Oh, perfect then. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to say about this trailer is I actually really like the lead actor in this trailer, Nick Robinson. He was on the show Melissa and Joey, and he's very, very funny. So I'm glad he's getting roles and his career is going, because I'd like to see him in a comedy, but it's like, this is not the right role. This is not the right movie. Tackle.
Looks like it's sort of finely made, but just not a subject matter that I care all that much about. And again, would have been pertinent two decades ago. So, Tackle.
James?
Tackle.
Final trailer.
All the Money is Ridley Scott's latest directorial effort, and it stars Mark Wahlberg as Liam Neeson in Taken.
That's right.
The plot of this movie is Michelle Williams' kid gets kidnapped and she hires Mark Wahlberg to find him, but then also the head of an oil company is for some reason also hiring Mark Wahlberg to do things, and then there's a lot of drama over should Mark Wahlberg do the things he's been hired to do or not, which involve guns and killing people.
Yeah, it's not clear what he's doing.
Because it's Mark Wahlberg and it involves him killing people, hug.
It's about an oil billionaire, which I love. Also, the guy whose money built the Getty Museum in L.A., which is my favorite museum in the world.
Oh, yes. This is based on a true story,
yes,
right?
Yes, this is based on a true story. And that's all awesome. Is this the movie, please correct me if I'm wrong, is this the movie that Kevin Spacey was in as John Paul Getty? And then after all the stuff came out, they were like, fuck it, we're reshooting every single scene with John Paul Getty with Christopher Plummer. Is this the movie?
Is there just some other movie where Christopher Plummer
I don't know if there was another
Getty
movie.
Is Getty this major historical figure where we're putting him in a movie everyone?
All right, shut up, James.
It says Hollywood actor, this is according to the Washington Post, when I Googled it, Hollywood actor Kevin Spacey is being edited out of Ridley Scott's upcoming movie, All the Money in the World, and replaced by actor Christopher Plummer.
How fucking fast was that? That's insane. And they say there's not enough time to do the special effects to release the Snyder Cut.
Maybe they green-screened him in.
Well, this is something I will say. I agree with everything you just said. They definitely have the Snyder Cut, and this is proof that they do. But what it is they shot the scenes with Christopher Plummer and put them in the trailer while they were still shooting other scenes. You know what I mean? These are the first scenes that
were done.
I
know, but it's coming out the 22nd of December. Like, it's not like they had all the time in the world here. That's an incredibly fast turnaround to change maybe not the main character, but the main supporting character in the movie. Anyway, yeah, looks kind of interesting. Christopher Plummer's awesome. And for that alone, I'll go ahead and hug it.
Yeah, and before you go, James, I just want to reiterate the point Daniel made about Justice League. There are people out there saying the Snyder Cut does not exist because they would have to pay millions of dollars for special effects. Look, the way Snyder shoots his movies is like animation. Most of the work is done on that film. There's probably low-quality special effects, but I would watch a low-quality special effects Snyder movie over probably every movie that's out there today. So this further proves it. The idea that they could reshoot these scenes and edit them that quickly.
Yep.
James?
I got a lot of stuff to do, you guys. I'm not going to watch this movie.
Is that your reasoning? Like, is there?
I'm just.
That's
busy.
My reasoning. Like, this could be good. This could be good, or it could be nothing, or it could be terrible. Like, there's an oil guy in it, so I'm sure there's gonna be social justice-y crapola in it.
Well, also Kevin Spacey played the oil company guy, so that's like a warning sign that like it's anti-big oil.
Oh right, exactly. Just I got better stuff to do with my time. I'm gonna work on my book or, you know, take a piss or something that benefits my life.
All right. Let's bring back an old segment then. It's time for us to send you a dick pic. For those of you who don't know, who are new to the show, because, you know, we did this like years ago. It's not D-I-C-K, you fucking perverts. It's D-I-C, and it stands for Dumb Internet Comment. And we pick one. It's the dumb internet comment of the week. You can send it in if you want. If you have a dick pic, send us your dick pics. This is probably very dangerous that I said that, especially because I'm giving out my Snapchat at the end. But go ahead. Send us your dick pics, and we will have it if we use it for our segment of the dumb internet comment of the week. So this one comes from Twitter. And this dick pic was sent in by Midsider Katrina. So get your minds out of the gutters.
And prepare to put them back in the gutters.
Yeah, prepare to put them back in the gutters. Especially because you have to actually click on the link to this tweet to see why it's so bad, especially for this show. So, did either of you actually click on the link?
I got it open right now.
Yeah. Okay. You're looking at the dick pic right now?
It is an enormous dick pic on my screen. It is
oh my God.
Dark.
Okay, here.
Yeah, let me make the window bigger. Make it
here
real
is the tweet
big.
Now remember, you can do more than 140 characters. And by the way, Daniel, can I just say the interface for Twitter is really confusing now because they don't tell you how many characters you have left. There's like a little circle, yeah, and it starts filling up. And I'm just like, how many words do I have left? Like,
yeah, as if they took user experience out back and put a bullet in its head.
Yeah, it gives me angst, dude. Like my autism just like goes off.
Twitter angst.
Not actually autistic. Okay, here it is. I don't know if you guys heard, my girlfriend just yelled from the other room, "You are autistic."
It's pronounced artistic.
Funny.
Okay, are we ready?
Yes.
All right. Individualism is pushed upon us by our enemies. Those of European descent need to come together as cohesive group. It doesn't even say a cohesive group. A group bound by tradition, heritage, and culture. Only when we stand as one can we hope to defeat those who wish to bring about our genocide. All right, and then you click on the picture, and this picture is literally a picture of 300. I'm not even kidding you. They took a movie still from 300, and they put Jordan Peterson behind one of the shields. So it's supposed to be ironic that Jordan Peterson, who celebrates individualism, is in a movie that supports collectivism. So there's two fucking things here, right? Three, actually. I mean, fuck you, you don't understand Jordan Peterson. Fuck you. Like, you make everyone who disagrees with the fucking left and the social justice warriors look like assholes. Like, this is not a battle of collectivism versus collectivism. And third thing is, you don't understand 300. And you don't understand what it means to work in a team. Just because you're in a team doesn't mean you're not individuals. And you didn't understand that they were fighting for individualism versus collectivism, freedom versus tyranny in 300. This is the dumbest thing I've seen in a very, very long time.
Yeah. Is Daniel? There go ahead, James.
I'm kind of surprised Katrina sent us this, and she's sympathetic to a lot of collectivism.
Fight.
So I'm actually not sure.
Great, James.
I'm not sure.
Now
I'm
she's
not
gonna
sure.
listen to this.
She may be taking something different. Yeah, I'm sure she will, but I think she may be taking this slightly differently than.
No, she's not. She explicitly said to me, this is why she hates the alt-right a lot of the time. So.
Then what's her basis for not hating it all the time? I guess we'll have to talk about
that.
There's
a lot of rhetorical issues.
I don't want to misread.
It's
just
something
a question.
I said to Daniel. Like, and actually going through Witness Wednesday to find old episodes, the alt-right never used to be linked with Nazis. This is a success of leftist rhetoric. Success of the news media and social justice warriors, that now everyone says all right and they say Nazis as if they're the same thing, and they never were. There isn't a large segment of Nazis and collectivists in this country. There isn't.
Yes. Yes.
It may not be large, but it's the only consistent, strong part of the right. That's why I'm sort of taking this in the... Like, that's why I'm sort of commenting on this from the angle I am, because I do take the alt-right seriously as a extreme threat to the long-term survival of individualism in the United States.
I think the other, yeah.
Because at the end of the day, they are nationalists. Like, whether they say that individualism is part of their nationalism or not, they're nationalists. And you cannot have a combination of nationalism and individualism. If you adhere to the philosophy of altruist ethics, your nationalism will win. And what does that look like? Well, it looks a hell of a lot like Nazism. So I don't disagree with the left's claim that they're kind of all Nazis. I mean, they're just as bad. So they have no, you know, room to complain. But they are making a extension that is valid, or at least coming to the right conclusion.
I don't know. I'm not interested in debating that at the moment. I'm interested in...
So I've ruined... Again, I'm ruining the premise of
James!
We were supposed to be dumping on the alt-right, but now you've made people have sympathy for the alt-right because you're doing the same thing the left does, where you're saying they're all Nazi collectivists. And like...
Well, no. They're not all Nazis. Yeah, you kind of just said that. It's just like not all Christians are suicide bombers, you know, or not all Muslims are suicide bombers. But if you take it consistently, that's what it leads to.
Okay. James's version of yes and is yes and let me derail this for you, I believe. Which there's a certain charm to, I'm not going to lie. I kind of look forward to it. I really do. But nonetheless,
yes and Daniel, yes and.
Yes and I want to hear what Daniel has to say.
The only point I want to make is that, and it's something you already touched on, but that I just want to reemphasize, Justin, is that there is this insane notion to me that individualism must mean that we cannot work together in any way. That if you're going to be a consistent individualist, you must be the quote-unquote rugged individualist. The idea that you pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, you have no help from any other person, you don't engage in groups and clubs and whatever. And the moment you do that, you're an inconsistent individualist. I think that's just a super, at this point, it's a super dishonest interpretation of individualism. There is enough literature out there and enough argument out there to disprove this stupid notion that at this point you are dishonest. If this is your advocacy, if this is what you think of individualism, you are a dishonest human being. Dick commenter of the week named Mark, who I won't give his full name.
Well, I would even extend what you're saying, Daniel, to this idea of ego, where people who do things out of being second-handed are considered to be doing things out of ego.
Yes.
So when people are doing things and they're doing it to be liked and for attention and to be revered, people go, oh, well, they're just egotistical. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's the opposite of egotistical. They're not doing it for themselves. They're not doing it because they think they know what's best. They're doing it to pander and have everyone like them. But we've conflated the two. It's the same misunderstanding, which is, I mean, from psychology even.
Yes.
Like when you go and you go to therapy, a psychologist won't tell you that's egotistical.
Right. Yeah. So that's what particularly to me is harmful about this thing. And it goes, and it's demonstrated in the caption that Jordan Peterson has on the photo, which we didn't read the first time, but Jordan, the Jordan Peterson head, which is hilariously photoshopped into this scene, says, quote, "This is a very bad idea, Leonidas. Don't you know that Western civilization is individualistic? We should split up and fight them separately." Just...
Can you imagine, like, in the huddle, like Danny Amendola's like, "That's a really bad idea, Tom Brady. We should just run our own routes and you throw it to whoever you choose." Like, yeah. We don't follow leaders because we can't make the individual judgment to trust someone to know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it shows that there's a lot of intellectual dishonesty in the history of people who advocated for altruism, because it you know, someone who, this is something that had to have been cooked up by someone who said, "Oh man, I don't have a real argument against individualism. Well, like, let's just kind of package deal it in with, you know, being kind of stupid and never dealing with other people," which is not a thing. There are very few people who do that.
Indeed. So there you go. Dick pic. And it's a good one. It's a good dick pic, Justin. Very veiny, this one.
Yeah, I figured I saw this. And I was like, this is a good one to restart this segment with. Because I think, Daniel, a few episodes ago, you had mentioned bringing it back,
didn't
you?
Yeah, I missed it. I really did.
Yeah. Well, it's a good one, but I was trying to, and this can, maybe this is a good segue into what we learned, but I was trying to disconnect myself from all of this. And I finally have enough emotional distance, and like, especially because of what I've dealt with recently. If anyone wants to know what I mean, they can ask me about it. Midsider Dan, you already know what I'm talking about. Because of what I've dealt with recently, I'm kind of desensitized to all of this. So it's now like dumb shit on the internet. Like, okay, whatever. It's good for the show and it's fun to rant about on the show. But beyond that, I don't care anymore. So I'm okay with delving into comment sections, because before I would like get really incensed and have to like reply to this on Twitter. But like now I don't feel the need to anymore. So I can just sort of peruse and find these. And it's healthy for me.
And by the way, in 300... there are a bunch of quotes. I mean, like, he never literally says the word individualism, but there are a bunch of quotes in 300 about, like, the few and the many, or the free and the unfree, or the men and the hordes. Like, there's a lot of allusions in the movie to individualism versus collectivism.
Well, and they even do the egotistical thing where fucking the hunchback does things out of what people would traditionally call ego, but it's really the lack of ego because he just wanted to be liked. I want a uniform. People would traditionally say that that's egotistical because he's saying what he wants, but that is just the lack of ego and the lack of self-esteem leading to needing the approval of having a uniform. That's why that line's so beautiful, because it's delivered in such a memorable way, but it's also, it's so deeply insightful philosophically and psychologically.
Yeah.
Or cruel Leonidas asks that you stand. I ask only that you kneel.
Like, is it the line is something like, "The world will know that free men stood against a tyrant," and something like that, "The few stood against the many." Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's almost exactly the line, in fact. But anyway,
and both of these lines, what you were talking about, Daniel, and James's line, It's talking about collectivism and how collectivism is the easier way, but you have to work together and do the more challenging thing to combat it.
Yeah. Anyway, fuck this guy.
Right, and that crippled people are morally
fuck collectivism in all of its forms. Right, left, I don't care.
What did we learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned that the original sin of being born with a Y chromosome means I'm an aggressive douche who could at any moment be violent against women. I didn't know that before this episode. I always felt so passive.
Yeah, especially you. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine someone saying that about you. Yeah. All right, James?
I learned that boobs aren't sexual. That is news to me. A lot of data going the other direction on that.
Yes. Nelson, what did you learn this week?
I relearned how awesome 300 is, and that Snyder will one day be appreciated much more than he is today. I mean, the fact that that movie is still being talked about and used, and the themes are still applicable. They're even more applicable to today.
Yeah.
It's just the motifs in that movie. It's just crazy.
And if you learned something this week, and if you agree with Justin, or if you agree with James, or if you disagree with all of them and me, tell us on the social medias, and where you can also send us your dick pic. That is dumb internet comment of the week, not the other thing. You can send it to at the midside on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat, Facebook, etc. All the social medias. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the past episodes. Go find the last time we did Dick Pick. I'm sure it's years ago. You can do that.
This was actually my first Dick Pick.
James.
that's a little personal.
It predates me on the show.
That's right. So, yeah. And you can go to themidside.com/store where you can pick up your Welcome to the Midside swag. Including a classic logo t-shirt.
Yo, I just realized something. Not to interrupt.
Yeah. Classic. Not
to
interrupt,
but I need to write Dick Pic, capital D, capital I, capital C, no space, lowercase p, lowercase I, lowercase c, capital K. That's how I need to write that segment
there you
title.
Go. I like it.
That's how it happens, ladies and gentlemen. You just witnessed the creative process.
Witness the farce.
Witness
also
the
point out the awards
themidside.com/awards.
I'm
point them out.
Pointing at
do
them,
it.
But
do
this
it,
is
Daniel.
An audio show, so you cannot see it. But that's good pod right there. You can go to themidside.com/awards and vote for Justin. What can they vote for at themidside.com/awards?
Well, the viewers get to choose the farcical story of the year. So that is the Midsider Award. Or the viewers, the listeners, the viewers. What the fuck? The listeners get to decide the most farcical story of the year. So I have selected a list. You get to pick from within that list. But you also get to nominate categories that we choose from. Tom Brady Medal for doubtness in the face of haters or doubters. Greatness in the face of there doubters.
Doubtness in the face of haters is also a weird award.
Of graders.
Yeah.
Doubtness
there's
in the face of graders.
The Narcissist of the Year Award, which, I mean, I think it's probably going to go to Donald Trump. Just the hunch.
As it will
just
go in perpetuity.
Yeah. We might have to rename that one.
The Donald Trump Award.
There's also the Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award, which is just something really awesome. Like, I think we gave it before to, what was it, Carrie Fisher for just owning someone about Princess Leia or something?
Yeah, about her not being strong and being too feminine. She's like, she choked a giant testicle with a chain for making her wear a bikini.
Yeah.
Like, she's pretty badass. Yeah.
And then there's the romantic manifestation, so the best work of romantic art in the past year.
So all good things. That will prepare us for our end-of-the-year show and the Midside Awards, our annual award show, which is going to be swell. And then you can go to patreon.com/themidside. You can help us financially. It is the season to do so. If you want to buy, advertisements for us, if you want to buy new equipment for us, you can choose to give us money every time we put out a piece of content. That is, we put out a show, you say, I'll give you $2 for that show. Fair trade.
Daniel says equipment because he really wants a new microphone.
God damn it, do I want a new microphone? I'm tired of talking into my MacBook. It's terrible. We know that not everyone can afford to do that. That's totally fine. The one thing I hope that you can all afford to do, though, is go up to a friend, open your mouth, and let the words, "You should listen to Welcome to the Midside," come out. There, you have told a friend about the show, and thus increased the reach of the show by one human being. If all of you did that, we would double the size of the audience. It'd be amazing. So tell a friend, tell a coworker, tell your family when you go home for Christmas, and put on the Midside while you sit by the fire and sip brandy and listen to Christmas carols and the Midside.
It is your duty to have the Midside conversation at Christmas.
That's right. For the better of society, you need to have the Midside conversation. That's right. So thanks. Tell a friend. Until next time, we love you lots.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelsnesky reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.